Thank you, Mr. Nick. It's always good to visit you guys up here. We enjoy it very much. And to see your bright, smiling faces, warm faces. Hi, Vina. Good to see you today. Anyway, so it's very, very nice to be here. My wife and I, you warmed it up outside a little bit, but it's always warm inside with you, and that's really nice. We have a kind of a early winter, it looks like. We'll see where this leads from here on. But we have the Thanksgiving break coming on. We're having our family in, some close friends for Thanksgiving, and hope you've got some plans, whether you're traveling or staying here. Please, if you're traveling, please be careful, and want you back. Have an enjoyable time. There's not a whole lot to report going on. From the home office, we've just finished, of course, with the feast, and we're just about got all of the feast information gathered. So that's behind us. That's always quite a job once we get back from the feast. I still have about a dozen boxes in my office that have to be taken care of, and I'll be doing that hopefully very first part of next week. So that's coming on. And then we have the council meeting. The council is coming into town the very first week in December. And so if you would keep that in your prayers, there's some planning now that has to go into mainly the planning for the next year's budget, which will begin, of course, in July of 2015. So that takes a lot of time, and they're a major issue they're focusing is every 3 years they do a major look at the strategic plan. And so this year is that year, and so there's an awful lot on the plate right now. Income is looking really good. Expenses are down. Income is up. And so it's very positive. And my wife and I see that, and we're just very grateful. God has really blessed us that way, and we are very thankful for that. There are a number of ladies mentioned in the Bible you were aware of who had quite a great part in the building of the church and mentioned throughout the Bible. Sarah, of course, and you have Mary, the mother of Jesus. You have Mary Magdalene, Martha. You have Dorcas, and you have Chloe, and other ladies such as that. But today I would like us to look at three ladies in the Bible who made a great impact on the world and history. And not only history, but its future. These three women came from very humble backgrounds, but are connected in a very powerful way. All three are connected in a very powerful way. Their stories should inspire us to seek what they had and help us to use that, especially as we grow towards the end of this age and the uncertainty that it will bring with it. We know the end. We all know the end. We can read the Bible. We can see that God wins. And He tells us we win with Him. But there will be many unknowns for us personally as we get there. The three women I want to look at today are Rahab, Ruth, and Esther. They each have a very special story to tell on their own. Each of you sitting here, you know their stories. Each of you sitting here probably have a story or two or more that you could tell as well. And there will be stories to tell at the resurrection. You can know that. At the resurrection, there are going to be many stories to tell. The subject I want to discuss and that connects these three wonderful ladies is courage. Courage. Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary defines courage as heart. I like that. Heart. Mental or moral strength to venture, persevere, and withstand danger. fear, or difficulty. It literally means strong of heart. Courage literally means strong of heart. Synonyms for courage are mettle, M-E-T-T-L-E, spirit, resolution, tenacity. Courage implies firmness of mind and will in the face of danger or extreme difficulty. Mettle suggests an ingrained capacity for meeting strain or stress with fortitude and resilience. Spirit suggests a quality of temperament that enables one to hold one's own against opposition, interference, or temptation. We just heard about that in the sermonette, didn't we? Resolution stresses firmness of character and determination to achieve one's ends. We all have a great end in front of us. Tenacity adds an implication of stubborn persistence and unwillingness to acknowledge defeat. An unwillingness to acknowledge defeat. The great Thomas Jefferson said that one person with courage is a majority. One person with courage is a majority. Please turn over to Joshua chapter 2. This is where we first run into Rahab. She is referred to as a harlot, a woman of ill repute. Joshua 2, verse 1. Now Joshua the son of Nun sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy out secretly, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came into the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. We're not told how these two spies happened to come to Rahab's house, but it was obviously God's guiding hand. And continuing in verse 2. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country." This king, we would refer to today as a mayor, but he was a king at that time. So the king of Jericho, verse 3, sent to Rahab and saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country." So the king, this mayor, has been made aware that these two men came to her house. And how does she respond? Verse 4. Then the woman took the two men and hid them, and she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened as the gate was being shut, when it was dark, that the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them." But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order on the roof. Rahab, at great peril to her and her household, hid these two spies. Now people question about Rahab, but she lied. Yes, she did. So did Abraham, more than once. But God saw something else above that. God still was going to use her. Joshua 2, verse 7. Then the men pursued them by the road. They went out on a wild goose chase, rode to the Jordan, to the fords, and as soon as those who pursued them had gone out, they shut the gate. She is and could be in a great deal of trouble. Basically, she is a traitor to her city, to her fellow citizens. And in verse 8, it continues, So before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof, and she said to them, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea For when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites, who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Gog, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven, above and on earth beneath. Now, keep in mind something here. Note something here. The Red Sea crossing had been 40 years prior to this. This had happened 40 years ago. But it was still much on their minds. She says that the people of Jericho and the areas surrounding were faint-hearted at the thought of Israel entering the land of Canaan. She also said, neither did there remain any courage in anyone because of you, the approaching Israelites. 40 years, and they remembered. They remembered what had happened and what God was doing. And in verse 12, now therefore I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown you kindness, that you also will show me kindness, that you will show kindness to my father's house and give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all they that have and deliver and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. So the men answered her, our lives for yours, if none of you tell this business of ours. And it shall be, when the Lord has given us all the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with you. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall, and she dwelt on the wall. And she said to them, get to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you. Hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Afterward, you may go your way. Then the men said to her, we will be blameless of this oath of yours, which you have made us swear, unless when we come into the land, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you have let us down. And unless you bring your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household to your own house. So it shall be that whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. And if you tell this business of ours, then we will be free from your oath, which you made with us, that you made us swear. Then she said, according to your words, so be it. And she sent them away, and they departed, and she bound the scarlet cord in the window. Then they departed and went to the mountains and stayed there 3 days until the pursuers returned. The pursuers sought them all along the way, but did not find them. So the men returned, descended from the mountain, and crossed over, and they came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and told him all that had befallen them. And they said to Joshua, truly, the Lord has delivered all the land into our hands, for indeed all the inhabitants of the country are faint-hearted because of us. After acknowledging the Lord their God is the God of heaven and earth, she then asked to be spared, because she knew what was going to happen to Jericho. How? She would not have known, but she knew it was going to be destroyed. So the two spies lay out the parameters she must follow, including not going out of her house, telling no one else about what was required to do, and placing a scarlet cord outside her window. Now, not only had she displayed tremendous courage by putting her life and life of her family in jeopardy to the point of death, she now must have great courage that what those two men promised her would come about. Another thing to remember, keep in mind, these two men made an oath on their own. Joshua was not even aware of it until these two men returned to their camp. They had made this oath with Rahab by themselves. You see, in many, many instances, faith requires great courage. We see that in Abraham and Sarah. We also see it in Joseph and Moses, just to name a few. In Joshua 6, then, we see the destruction of Jericho. Pick it up in verse 12, Joshua 6, verse 12. And Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priest took up the ark of the Lord. Then seven priests bearing seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew with the trumpets, and the armed men went before them. But the rear guard came after the ark of the Lord while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. And the second day they marched around the city once again and returned to the camp. So they did 6 days. Now mind you, all this time, once the spies had left, she had to remain in her house with her family. Had no clue when this was going to happen. She could not venture, none of her family could venture out of the house. They had to remain true to that oath. In verse 15, but it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawning of the day and marched around the city seven times in the same manner. On that day only they marched around the city seven times. And the seventh time it was so, when the priest blew the trumpets, that Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, and all who are in it, only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who are in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. So Joshua here acknowledges Rahab. And in verse 20, so the people shouted when the priest blew the trumpets, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat. Then the people went up to the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and ox, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkey, with the edge of the sword. But Joshua had said to the two men who had spied out the country, go into the harlot's house, and from here bring out the woman and all that she has, as you swore to her. And the young men who had been spies went in, brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brothers, and all she had, and they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel, for they burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. And Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's house, and all that she had. So she dwells in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Rahab and her family courageously did what she was commanded to do, to save their souls. What must it have been like in a room on the wall of the city when it was all coming crashing down? How frightening was that? How could that have been? But she and her family stood resolute. Rahab had the courage to believe, and what the two spies had promised her would be fulfilled. One of the issues Rahab faced was peer pressure. It takes moral courage to resist peer pressure. The pressures from her neighbors and others in the city. You know, our children face pressures all the time. But it's not just our children. We too face peer pressure on a daily basis, outside and sometimes within the church, unfortunately. But we are called on to resist, to stand resolute, to have courage. Lisa Ackerson said it well. It is hard to stand up to our enemies, but it is even harder to stand up to our friends. It takes courage and strength. But it takes a good friend to stand up and say, no, this is the right way. This is the way to walk. And there's a message for all of us in what's called Building Better Families. And it says, walk it and talk it. That is, live ethically yourself. It's up to us individually. We can't depend on someone else. We're not living their lives. We're living our lives. That is, be of good courage. Now we look at Ruth. She lived during the time of the period of the judges, sometime after Joshua, who was a judge himself, and before the time of the kings. She has a whole book to herself. If I can find it, I think it's still in my Bible. Ruth 1, verse 1. Now it came to pass, in the days when the judges ruled, that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon, and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came to the country of Moab and remained there. We see a famine in the land of Israel caused a man with his wife and two sons to move into the land of Moab. This man's name was Elimelech, which means he to whom God is king. What a crowning name to have. But I want you to hold your place here before we go on. Let's consider another interesting point before we move on here. Remember where the Moabites came from? Turn to Genesis 19. It's a very, very sad story. Lot had just fled from Sodom with his two daughters and his wife originally, of course. And we pick up the story in verse 30. His wife had turned around and looked back, and we know what happened to her. Verse 30 of Genesis 19. Then Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar, and he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is no man on earth to come into us, as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father." So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father. And he did not know when she lay down and when she arose. And it happened on the next day that the firstborn said to the younger, "Indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight also, and you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father." Then they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger rose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn bore a son called Moab. He is the father of the Moabites today. And the younger, she also bore a son. She called his name Ben-Ami. He is the father of the people of Ammon to this day. Some have surmised from what is written here that these two daughters of Lot thought the whole world had been destroyed when Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed. They actually thought they were the only three people left alive on the earth, and that's plausible. So the Ammonites and the Moabites were actually fairly close relatives to the Israelites themselves, as Lot was nephew to Abraham. Now, go back to chapter 1 of Ruth. Verse 3, of Ruth 1. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then, tragically, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband. Naomi lost the three dearest men in her life. Now, let's look at something else interesting. Hold your place here in Ruth again, but turn over to 1 Samuel 22. 1 Samuel 22. Verse 1 through 4. 1 Samuel 22, verse 1 through 4. David therefore departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down to him. And everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him. So he became captain over them, and there were about 400 men with him. Then David went from there to Mizpah of Moab and said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and mother come here with you till I know what God will do for me." So he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. So things were amicable between David and Moab, and the king of Moab at this time. Just as Elimelech and Naomi fled to Moab, so did David's family. But there may be another reason as well, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Ruth 1, verse 6. Then she, that is, Naomi, arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. Therefore she went out from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to his mother's house, for the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "Surely we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back. My daughters, why will you go with me? Are there still my sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands?" This was referring to the Levirate law, which said that the law was, if a husband died, the widow was then to marry the next son in line, and actually then the firstborn of that marriage would actually be the firstborn of the husband, his brother that had died. This is what that is referring to. "Turn back, my daughters," verse 12. "Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband tonight, and it should also bear sons, where would you wait for them? Would you wait for them until they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the land of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Ruth clung to her. In verse 15, "And she said, 'Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law.' But Ruth said," this is one of the most famous passages in all the Bible, "'entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people should be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. Then she saw that she was determined to go with her, and she stopped speaking to her. Naomi decided that she would not try to convince Ruth to stay. Ruth was expressing extreme great courage here. She was leaving her own country for a nation and a people that she did not know. Ruth had no idea what the future would hold for her. My wife pointed out a quote to me when I was working on this. She got it from the internet, and I think it's very, very interesting. You cannot discover new continents without losing sight of land. You cannot discover new continents without losing sight of land. There is a lot to that. It can be a rather fearful thing to set out on a new path, because you may have to let go a lot of the past. Or, as another lady said, Mary Bryant said, courage is the power to let go of the familiar. Courage is the power to let go of the familiar. Ruth, I'm sure, did not hold out any hopes of ever being married again, but she wanted to be with her mother-in-law, who must have been a fantastic example of a woman, wife, and mother. And I can personally speak to that because my mother-in-law was an absolute gem, and my family and I miss her very, very much. So Naomi, now calling herself Mara, meaning bitter, and Ruth settled in Bethlehem. They moved back to Bethlehem. And in chapter 2, verse 1, and Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So all of a sudden, Boaz enters the picture. He's a relative of Ruth's father-in-law. Boaz is introduced to Ruth when she comes to glean grain from his field. And in verse 10, it says, then she fell on her face and bowed down to the ground and said to them, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? And Boaz answered and said to her, it has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth, and have come to a people whom you did not know before. Boaz realized the great qualities that Ruth had and was displaying. And then he showed her great compassion and concern, especially since he knew she was a relative of his. Chapter 3, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that I may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our kinsman? He's related to us, right? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. So Naomi says, therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies down. You shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you shall do. And she said to her, all that you say to me, I will do. And she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Whoa, that would have been a shock. Now it happened at midnight. That the man was startled, I would say that was an understatement, and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said to her, "Who are you?" So she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a near kinsman." And then he said to her, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you in all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." Here is Ruth, following the instructions of her much-loved mother-in-law. But Ruth probably, I'm not sure about this, has no idea what the outcome will be, or even if she will live. Once again, Ruth shows courage by listening to and going and doing what Naomi told her to do. After all, it says in verse 8, Boaz was startled. Startled, like you might be with an intruder in your house, possibly. But she did just as Naomi instructed, and the results are recorded for all time. Boaz took her as his own, and she eventually became, as we can see in chapter 4, verse 21. Turn over to verse 4, chapter 4, verse 21 and 22. And Solomon begat Boaz, and Boaz begat Obed. Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. Ruth is the great-grandmother of King David. That's a powerful connection. Ruth is the great-grandmother of King David. This might also explain why David asked the Moabite king to protect his family, might it? He was related to them. His grandmother was a Moabite. So he could have felt comfortable doing that. Now we come to Esther, queen of the Medes and Persians. Once again, a whole book is dedicated to her. She is an orphan, being looked after by her cousin Mordecai. But Esther is also a Jewess. I think we pretty much remember the story of how she became queen. Vashti, the queen, refused to obey her husband and the king, and was banished from the kingdom. Several young maidens were brought to the palace in order to groom them for the king. One of those maidens would be chosen to be queen. Esther, of course, was chosen and replaced the disgraced Vashti. After Esther was made queen, her cousin Mordecai learns of a plot by a man named Haman to kill all the Jews in the land of the Medes and Persians. Haman goes to the king and gets approval from him to follow through with his dastardly deed, to give all of the people in the land the authority to kill any and every Jew on a specific day. And the king approves that, signs it with his ring, signet ring. In chapter 3, we pick up the story, chapter 3 of Esther, verse 8. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, "There are certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples, and they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it is not fitting for the king to let them remain. If it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work, to bring it into the king's treasuries." So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, The money and the people are given to you to do with them as it seems good to you. Then the king's scribes were called, in verse 12, on the 13th day of the first month, and a decree was written according to all that Haman commanded to the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, to the officials and all people, to every province according to a script, and to every people in the land and in their language. In the name of King Ahasuerus, it was written and sealed with the king's signet ring. And the letters were sent by couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. A copy of the document was to be issued as law in every province, being published for all the people that they should be ready for that day. The couriers went out, hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in Shushan the citadel. So the king and Haman sat down to drink, and the city of Shushan was perplexed. Now the king, nor Haman, neither of them is aware that Queen Esther is a Jew herself. Verse 1 of chapter 4, we pick up the story. When Mordecai learned all that had happened, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the midst of the city. He cried out with a loud and bitter cry. And he went as far as the square in front of the king's gate, for no one might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province where the king's command and decree arrived, there was mourning, great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her, and the queen was deeply distressed. Then she sent garments to clothe Mordecai and take his sackcloth away, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called Hatach, one of the king's eunuchs, whom he had appointed to attend her, and she gave him a command concerning Mordecai, to learn what and why this was. Esther did not know about the decree. Verse 7, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him, and the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the hand to the king's treasuries to destroy the Jews. So he also gave him a copy of the written decree for their destruction, which was given at Shushan, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her, and that he might command her to go into the king to make supplication to him and plead before him for her people. So Hadash returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Then Esther spoke to Hatach and gave him a command for Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king who has not been called, he has but one law. Put all to death except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. So they told Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai told them to answer Esther, do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will come for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yes, yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther told them to return to this answer to Mordecai. Go, gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan, and fast for me, neither eat nor drink for these 3 days and nights. My maids and I will fast likewise. And I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. Then Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. Verse 14 is probably one of the most profound statements in all the Bible. Yet, who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? None of us knows when we may be placed in a position to stand up for something. We do not know, but who knows that may come to each of us. None of us knows when we might be thrown into a position requiring a very important decision on our part. And if I perish, so be it, I perish. But a courageous person is one who feels and recognizes fear, but does what he or she believes is right anyway. That is what a courageous person does. Recognizes fear, but does what he or she believes is right anyway. So in verse 1 of Esther 5, now it happened in the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, across from the king's house, while the king sat in his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of the house. So it was, when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, that she found favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you up to half my kingdom." And Esther answered, "If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him." Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, that he may do as Esther has said." So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. At the banquet of wine, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition?" "It shall be granted to you." "What is your request?" "Up to half my kingdom." "It shall be done." This act of presenting herself to the king without an invitation took unbelievable courage and pure grit. This was a great display of tenacity, spirit, and resolve on the part of Esther, because she didn't know if she would be alive the next day. Verse 7 of chapter 5. Then Esther answered the king, "My petition and request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said." Strange petition. But the king grants it. Neville Blair said this, "Courage is conscious moral strength motivated by convictions. It ventures forth, it perseveres, it withstands danger, fear, or difficulty, and all of that rests down firmly on convictions." On convictions. He continues, "Courage needs convictions. Preferences are not enough." What is the distinction, he says? Courts normally make the distinction this way. If you are willing to go to a prison or to die rather than change your belief, that belief is a conviction. If you would relinquish the belief rather than go to prison or die, that belief is a preference. It's only a preference. It is not a conviction. It sometimes takes great courage to stand for what we do and know is right. But as long as good people do nothing, evil will continue to triumph. Mark Twain is credited then with saying, "Courage is not the absence of fear. It is acting in spite of it." Courage is not the absence of fear. Oh, there's fear there. Can be fear many times. It is acting in spite of it. So in verse 1 of chapter 7, Esther, so the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And on the second day at the banquet of wine, the king again said to her, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Up to half my kingdom, it shall be done. Then Queen Esther answered and said, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss. Then King Ahasuerus answered and said to Queen Esther, who is he and where is he and who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? Uh-oh. You know, about that time I have a large cleaning bill. And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. So Haman was terrified before the king and queen. Then the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stood before Queen Esther, pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king. Queen Esther all of a sudden reveals that she is a Jew. And once again, came before the king uninvited. I'm got a little ahead of myself. We got to get to chapter 8 first. It took great courage for Esther to reveal her true identity, her true nationality, that she was a Jew and that she was slated to be killed along the rest of those of her nationality. We turn to chapter 8, verse 1. And on that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai, and Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. Now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evil plot of Haman the Agagite and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. Now, once again, it appears for a third time, Esther has come before the king without an invitation. She comes for a third time, presents himself before the king without an invitation. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther, so Esther arose and stood before the king and said, if it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his sight, in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who were in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? And the king said to Queen Esther of Mordecai the Jew, indeed, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he tried to lay his hand on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree, because once the decree was sealed, it could not be reversed. But now you write a decree for the Jews as you please in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring. For a letter which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke. So that signet, what had already been sealed, could not be revoked. So the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, in the 23rd day, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps, the governors, and the princes of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all, to every province in its own script, to every people in their language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus, sealed it with the king's signet ring, and sent letters by couriers on horseback, riding on royal horses, bred with swift steeds. By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault him, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. We see a great deal of faith and courage being displayed here by Esther and also by Mordecai. Courage is a major part and theme of the book of Esther. A thought-provoking comment whose author is unknown says, "There are too many people praying for mountains of difficulty to be removed when what they really need is courage to climb them." There are too many people praying for mountains of difficulty to be removed when what they really need is courage to climb them. Basically said, get over it. We've looked at three wonderful women. Each one displayed courage and valor in their own special way. Each one had a special story. They are all connected through courage, yes. But they are all connected in another way. Esther was an Israelite of the tribe of Judah. She, being a Jewish, was made queen over a Gentile nation. And her actions saved her people from almost total destruction. Rahab and Ruth were both Gentiles. One a Canaanite and the other a Moabite. Turn to Matthew chapter 1 for just a minute. Turn over to Matthew chapter 1. 1 through 6. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Verse 2 of chapter 1 of Matthew. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac begot Jacob, and Jacob begot Judah and his brothers. Judah begot Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nashon, and Nashon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. Boaz begat Obed by Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David the king. And David the king begat Solomon by her who had been his wife of Uriah. As pointed out earlier, Ruth was the great-grandmother of King David, and Rahab was the great-great-grandmother of King David. So these two Gentile women were in the direct lineage of King David, who is going to one day rule over all of Israel in the kingdom. But they are also in the lineage of Joseph, who was Jesus Christ's father here upon this earth, physical father here upon this earth. These two Gentile women, partly because of their courage, faith, and resolve, were in the lineage of the very one who not only saved a nation, but saved the world. We have looked at three great women of the Bible. Three wonderful women who showed great courage in sometimes dire and ominous circumstances. Rahab is even mentioned in the faith chapter, Hebrews 11. What a testimony to her faith and courage by the Apostle Paul. The opposite of courage is faint of heart or fear. Turn over to 1 John 4, verse 18. You all are familiar with the passage, but we'll read it here. 1 John 4, verse 18. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment, but he who fears has not been made perfect in love. Love and courage go together. Perfect love casts out fear. So true courage requires the love of God in our hearts. A courageous person is one who feels and recognizes fear, but still does what he or she believes is right, what she knows is right. None of us can reach our full potential if fear is always holding us back. It cannot be done. True courage requires faith, faith that God is there to back us up. When problems seem insurmountable, when that mountain is there staring us right in the face, like what Esther, Ruth, and Rahab faced, they believed God was bigger than the problem. With God, all things are possible, we are told. We must have the conviction of courage to believe and trust in that promise always. We can learn much from these three ladies we've looked at today. Look to them and others like them for their examples of courage, faith, and determination to do the right thing, to stand up. Courage is a character trait. It is a way of life. It must be in you and part of you. Winston Churchill said, "Courage is the first of human qualities because it is a quality that guarantees all others." We have all faced challenges in the past. We will face challenges in the future. We know that. Only God and Jesus Christ know what the ultimate outcome will be for each one of us when we face those challenges, those problems that are ahead. We must never lower our standards, but take heart and have courage in the power and strength of God the Father through their great and wonderful Holy Spirit. Be a majority. Have courage.